The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For Afrojack, this is success.
Me being able to do what I want when I want and be okay with the repercussions.
Afrojack is a world-famous Dutch DJ whose real name is Nick Fundewal. He's a hero in electronic music, but even if you're not into that scene, you've almost definitely heard a song he's made. It may have been an original or one of his many collaborations with artists like Pitbull, Nicki Minaj, and David Guetta. A collaboration with Guetta actually won him a Grammy. After 15 years of playing everywhere from small clubs to big arenas, Afrojack is now passing on what he's learned. He's the CEO of the talent management company LDH Europe and the head of his own record label. With both, he takes a hands-on approach to discovering and mentoring young DJs. One piece of advice he's giving new artists: put the hours in, even if you don't see success for years.
Initially, when I got into music, I just did it for fun, and I was very lucky. I had a supportive family. So
you were really young, right?
Yeah, I started music production when I was 11, just for fun. Yeah. I was a break dancer, street dancer. And when I was 14, 15, I went to the club for the first time, heard house music, and I saw like how when people are coming together and enjoying something, they're all good. And then when they go back outside and the music stops, like suddenly everyone's like fat, skinny, tall, small, rich, poor, yeah. Everything. Like then you get the societal issues. Well, when there's a party, it's just people having a party. So to me, it showed like, yo, there's a totally different way of maintaining a society outside of the current society we live in. So that's what got me into music initially. And then later, like, you got managers, you get lawyers, you get all this business stuff going on. And you see, it's very easy to get drowned and get pulled into back into the box. And even though your box might be music, it's still a box. And you're still limited by the expectations of your publisher, your publicist, your agent, your manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I learned, thank God, like a few years ago, that doesn't make you happy. Like, it'll get you successful, but it won't eventually make you happy. And actually going out of the box and just like doing stuff you like, even though it might sound silly, that's the fun stuff. And that's also what brought me the most success. You know, I had a lot of underground records. It was very big in the underground. And then Pitbull called me. So like, yo, you want to do a record? It's like, well, yeah, but you're kind of like your commercial music, you know, and I'm underground. So, and while I was thinking this, I was like, wait, that's not really fair. So I'm going to tell Pitbull no, because he's too successful.
It would be holding yourself back.
It would be holding myself back and holding him back because he's too successful. Like, I would love to work with you. You're a very nice guy, but I can't do it because then my fans will think I'm a sellout. Wait, it's the opposite, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's like I think the most profound business advice you could give anyone is like, really stay true to what you love to do and don't make any concessions personally. You can make them like in work, you can strategize, but don't lie to yourself. Know what you're doing and know what's real.
Yeah. And you said that you came to this realization a few years ago. What happened a few years ago with that?
Well, I think it was like the biggest mistake of my career. The biggest mistake of my career. Not necessarily like, oh my God, my life changed, but by far one of the biggest songs I ever made that I didn't put my name on. So David Guetta sent me an email and we were working on Titanium. It was a tremendous hit for me,
yeah,
but I never put my name on it. But it's not like David took the record and ran. It's like David emailed me. He said like, hey, so the song is done. You want to do David Guetta and Afrojack featuring Sia, Titanium? And I said like, nah, it's too much of a song for me, you know, like I'm more cool and underground. So
you just thought it would be selling out.
It with Sia. Yeah. And then like the song took off and everyone went crazy. And then all my interviews, they started asking me about it. I was like, yeah, it's kind of silly. So me making a decision out of fear for the reaction of society made me make the less successful decision and the not real decision. Because the real decision would be like, well, yeah, I worked on it. Of course I want my name on it. I want people to know what I do. I had fun working on it. It wasn't like I was like, oh, my God, it's pop music. No, like I loved it. I learned so much. So, yeah, I think like that email and like I still want to print the email and like put it in my studio so I can use it as a lesson for other artists. But that's definitely like the biggest mistake I ever made in my career. And I almost made it again a few times.
Really?
But I think everyone makes that mistake sometimes, you know, like you just get pressured into doing something that everyone says is right. You're not sure about it, but well, if everyone is jumping in the ocean, let's jump in the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. No, don't do it.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not, like, maybe you can't swim. And everyone already learned to swim. And then you're in the ocean and you can't swim. And it was like, oh, well, if you can't swim, why did you jump in the ocean? And you're like, yeah. You know? So don't jump in the ocean if you can't swim.
Yeah. And at what point in your career in these last few years did you realize that you had learned stuff that you could pass on to like a whole new group of talent, like of young DJs coming up?
Say if you compare music industry to the food industry, and I figured out my way as a producer to become like a McDonald's of production, then like someone's going to do Burger King. Might as well be me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. Yeah, it's not like you're creating your own competition. It's just like you're recycling your information. Like I know how to tour. Like I know how to promote. I used to sell tickets for parties and stuff, you know. I used to be there at the door handing out flyers. I used to clean up the club. Like I know everything about what's happening in a nightclub. So if I pass on that information to a new DJ, and instead of walking in a nightclub and go like, yo, you booked me, I'm the guy, he goes in and he says hi to the bartender, hi to the security people, hi to the cleaners, hi to the toilet people, like it's going to be a completely different vibe. Everyone's going to be happier and he's going to be way more appreciated. So get booked more.
So all the stuff you had to learn.
Yeah, basically that's all I'm doing. Like I learned all this stuff, write a book about it. But instead of releasing the book and like, look at my book, I'm so smart. Like I said, like, no, you can get in my book, but you can sign here and I'll teach you everything. And I can guarantee a certain level of success because I already have the network. And I think this is like, This isn't even for me like the business step to make. Like the business step for me to make would be to maintain my current career, continue focusing on my own singles, making the same amount of money every year, and then growing to be old with lots of money. But I don't want to do that. I want like what I learned like by touring is like you get lonely easy, and it's so much fun when you get to, how you say, redistribute the wealth. Like when I get on a private jet, it's nice. It's like, yeah, private jet. But I don't even think about it because I do like 200 flights a year. So I get on and like I open my laptop, I get to work. But the first time I got on, I was like, oh my God, there's no security. I don't have to show my passport. I can just sit. I can have nuts. Back then I used to smoke. You can smoke on the plane? What? I thought the plane would like if you smoke. No, like there's all these things. And for me, the first time was like, yeah. And then the 10th time it was like, yeah. And then the 1,000th time it's still like, okay, it's still pretty cool. And just for me to set it up, it would cost me one phone call. And you can go on the chat and you see everyone and you get to meet new fans and you get to meet a new audience. For me to do one phone call to help someone's career change or someone's life change, like that's the most fun thing there is.
So you had become so used to kind of a certain level of success that even if you maintained it, it would just feel empty?
Well, it's a very funny thing which occurs across religions and across different philosophies, that even if you have everything, like we're designed subconsciously to then start fiddling away on our own stuff. So a lot of people will probably notice as soon as they reach a level where they think like, wow, I'm actually happy right now. Like everything is going well. And then you're like, yeah, it gets kind of boring. It doesn't matter like what you do in life. But if you just had a good day at work and all your projects are finished and your school is good, your family is good, you just got paid and you're there on the couch. Okay, so what do I do now? And then like you start nibbling away on your own success to create a new hole to fill up, because that's how we're built as people. Okay, so no matter what you do in life, no matter what your business is, your business is always dependent on one very, very specific, important, complicated thing. People. Mm-hmm. People. Everyone seems to forget this. Everyone, like if you're a microphone salesman, you're focused on the microphone. If you're a hat salesman, you're like, yeah, but this hat is so special. The pen, like, sell this pen. Like, it's not about the product, it's about the consumer. But if you don't study the consumer, if you don't study people, how do you expect to become successful with anything? So what we started doing over the last 5 years, instead of just going like, oh, let me sit down and make a song and hope people like it, was actually make a lot of songs and see like algorithms in it, patterns, to figure out like, why do people like music? Instead of going like, here's a song, I hope you like it, go like, why do they like it?
Like analyzing it like scientifically?
Yes. But this is like a strategy that everyone's supposed to use for everything. But somehow when we need to like apply to our own life or to our hobbies or to something passionate, then it's supposed to happen organically. But when you're speaking of your work, you write a plan. If you have like an important job interview, you write a plan. You start a business, you write a plan. You got to figure out finances, you write a plan. You got to figure out the thing you love most in your life. Let's go with the flow. Let's make it happen. It will come falling out of the sky. Like, yeah. No, that's like, then you got to really sit down and think about it.
Yeah. And when you're saying how structure is important for reaching like what you're trying to accomplish, what do you have set out before you right now?
What do I have right now? Well, I got very lucky. So 3 years ago, I was in Japan, in Tokyo, for the first time. I was like, wow, everyone's so nice here. I was there with a man named Verbal. He's the head of a clothing brand called Ambush, and he's also chief creative advisor for a company called LDH in Japan, Love, Dream, Happiness. Very big management company, almost a $1 billion company. So I met these people, and I had this idea of like, well, I'm probably crazy, but I think everyone can do anything. And then I met these people. And I met the main man, Hiro-san, the founder of that company, running an almost $1 billion company based on artist development and the dream of basically making business, like sort of doing a, what's the program name? Shark Tank thing. Doing a Shark Tank thing for creative people and artists with very weird dreams. So to me, when I saw that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I started doing it with my label that I already had. And we started signing artists. I signed Feist, who had a first like multi-platinum single. It's now touring and stuff, doing very well. Signed a couple of other artists. And then about 2 years ago, they said like, so how would you like to run LDH Europe? I was like, well, that's nice, but I already have my company, guys. Like, I can't run two companies at the same time. So they basically said, well, let's just put everything together and then start working. So now Wall Recordings is a part of LDH Europe, and I'm the head of LDH Europe. And LDH Europe's main thing is to find talented people that are motivated and willing to give up their current life for their new life. And there's this thing, I had it with one of the girls that we recently signed. I was talking to her, and she was like always like a little bit shy. And if she got shy, she went like, And I told her, well, you got to stop like beating around the bush like that. And she said, but that's just how I am. It's like, but that's not who you will be. So I told her like, yo, like you're like right now you're a student. You're going to be a super successful artist. So you have to get comfortable with who you are and be also being comfortable with not really knowing how you are, because you're a variable. So, and people also forget this. People are variable. So embrace the variableness and don't be afraid to change.
And so you were able to take advantage of this just because of the way that you can network and the people that you meet.
Well, of course, I built the network already.
Exactly.
So we have a set network. Like we have phone numbers of people that most people don't have phone numbers of.
Exactly.
Then, of course, LDH has also very, very serious business connections and creative connections. And it's also the fact that we're not dependent of a bank or a big investment committee. Because if you would go to like an investment committee and you would say like, well, I have this idea. Can you please put in 25 million? They're like, no, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Here's $10. And in my case, well, like I'm definitely putting my money where my mouth is. Like all the money that I made over my career is now going into building studios, getting these kids apartments, getting them the right teachers, getting them dancing teachers, getting them mental coaches, like everything necessary to get them to where they want to be, where they can do what they love. And that's like that's the final financial risk I'm taking.
So it's kind of like you're almost like a Silicon Valley investor, but like among DJs, kind of like you're like incubating them.
Yeah, but I'm investing in the recycling of my own information.
Yeah, so on that, when we were talking about like how you have this network that you it took years to build up and now you're passing it on to other people, I want to like kind of go back to when you didn't have that network. If someone's listening and they're like, it would be great to have these connections, but I don't have any. What do you, like, how do you do that in the first place?
Okay, so the main thing that I base my writing people off on is when I meet them, it's like, I really want to do this, but so and so and so. And then 99% of the time, so and so and so is not enough of an excuse not to have made it. So if you look at my situation, I was cleaning up the floors at the club. I was waiting in the DJ booth until the DJ had to go to the toilet so I could play one song.
You snuck a song in? Back.
Yeah. I went to like pick up glasses. Like I was walking around with towers of glasses through the club. Like anything I could do to be around what I love to do. If you look at the success of Justin Bieber, everyone think like, oh, Justin Bieber just was born successful. No. Scooter took Justin with his guitar to every radio station, waited sometimes 3, 4, 5 hours outside or like right by the door in the lobby, whatever, until they could please listen to him play. They don't even need to broadcast, just please listen to this kid play. So it's literally you go up to the doorstep of where you want to get a job or where you want anything. You lay down there and you say, I'm not leaving until I get a job. Or I don't even need the job. Just listen to my story or let me prove to you, you know? So when you do that, it's a totally different ballgame. And then if you're like any good, it's everything. But the most important thing, most people say they tried everything, but they didn't try shit. It's like, yeah, so I really wanna become a DJ, okay? I've been producing for a week now. And it's not going very well. I'm like, of course not. You've been producing for a week. I started producing when I was 11. I didn't have my first song signed until I was 17. And that required me first 4 years of production, then 2 years of figuring out why my songs weren't working. But it's not just like do it a lot. It's also think about why you're doing it. When you look at Cristiano Ronaldo, when you look at LeBron James, these guys, they don't just train football or train basketball, like, oh, let me kick this ball 1,000 times to make it go as right as well as it can be. They think about the strategy. They think about, if I move here, where will he go? What will his reaction be? Maybe I should make a cluck sound like a chicken to scare him off for a second and then shoot. Like, strategic thinking. So it's not like LeBron became good by just doing this a million times. He did this a million times while thinking about how to do it the next 100,000 times and the next 100,000 times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's how you become great at something. And that requires you to put away your pride because you will look really silly.
On this notion of collaboration, like if you even wanted to give an example of what it's like when you're working with someone creatively, because I think that this applies to whether it's like LDH and doing something from a business standpoint. I think it's similar too to like if you were in the studio working with someone on something. Like, what have you learned on just how to deal with people and when to like kind of hold your ego in check and then when to like push forward? Like, what have you learned with that?
Well, I think what I learned most by working in the studio with like very successful people is that like not just me, but my whole team is there. And you notice like when the artist just talks to you or if they also say hello to the rest of your team. And then ego comes into play, of course. So one of the most important things I heard from Zennism is that like it's a very serious effort to try and destroy your ego, like completely remove your ego. But ego is a human part of you, so you can't completely get rid of it. But to make it as small as possible, it's the best thing you can do. So I get in the studio with a great artist. He meets everyone, like he says hello to everyone. He says hello to me. We're all cool. We have the greatest sessions ever, make great music. Someone else comes in and is like, hey, yo. Ah, yeah. Hey, what's up, man? So nice to meet you. Yeah. So let's get this thing cooking. Don't say hi to my cameraman. Don't say hi to my manager. Don't say hi to my publicist. Like, I'm already like, do I want to be affiliated with a person like this? But not just me thinking this. Everyone in the room is thinking this, you know? So they might be successful, but do I rather have like this big of a company with this guy that I don't like, or half as big, but with a guy I really like? You know, so if you look from that perspective, no one's going to work with the guy that's an asshole. So, or not necessarily be an asshole, but like has the ego or thinks like he has to live up to certain expectations. So what I learned the most by working with celebrities and like very famous artists is like not just be humble, but like make them feel humbled, like take care of them, take care of their people. That's what I learned. And of course, you never know who anyone is. But also, let's all like be very, very real. If you're nice to me, but you're not nice to my cameraman, like everyone will notice it. So don't just be nice to the people that matter.
And so like on that note too, of like as you got bigger and you started getting into more projects and you started growing your business, the business side of things, more than just the creative side of it, did you have to learn how to trust people in a new way? As in, like, now they're dealing with everything that you've created and kind of taking it into a business side of things? And what was that like?
I did have to learn to trust some people. And it was very, very difficult sometimes. But eventually it worked out. But the only reason it worked out is because we were completely honest and open with each other. What do I like? What don't I like? What makes me happy? What makes you happy? What do you need? What do I need? What's the goal? And that's the thing. What I keep saying to myself and to my team, like my management team and like my CEOs and stuff, is be neutral. It's not about how you feel about the situation. It's about what situation is good for the company. Because it used to be just me. Now I have all these artists signed to me and people with lives, with families, like we're providing for them. They took a risk by working for a new company. It's not going to look good on their resume if the company fails. So then like we're responsible for all these people. So now when it comes down to what is the next step, it's like, I don't agree, man. I think that brand is whack. Like, no, it's not about what you think. It's about like, look at it neutrally. How does the artist feel? How do you feel? How does the fan feel? And then when we have all the feelings, is it good? Will it work to bring the artist where he wants to be? Will it make the brand happy? Will it bring the brand what they want to have? And make your decision based on that. Be neutral. Like, stop. I don't know how to say that. Like, the peacock behavior or
peacocking?
Something?
Peacocking?
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. Like, just stop it.
Just stop flaunting. Yeah, stop because, like, flaunting yourself.
You look silly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, the more you are involved with it personally, sillier look. You know how important this is for me? No, it's not. It's not
remember
important.
Remember the other people that
your
you're
kids in school
with.
Is important. This project isn't important. So anyone that ever says like, yeah, but this project is very important for me. It's not. Even like, I'll tell you right now, and it's like probably the worst thing I can say if I would have shareholders, but I don't, so they can suck it. LDH isn't important. The company isn't important. My project isn't important. What's really important is that I wake up happy, that I go to sleep happy, that my mom wakes up happy, that she goes to sleep happy, my kid wakes up happy, she goes to sleep happy, and the same goes for everyone I'm working with. Of course, that is partly dependent on the success of LDH, but even if LDH would flop and Afrojack would still flourish, then I could use that to give them other jobs to still create the same amount of happiness. But happiness is not based on a $1 billion company. I can't imagine what to do with $1 billion, like outside of reinvesting, but then you see a lot of $1 billion companies reinvesting their money to make more money. It's like, no, make more happiness, figuring it out better.
So it's prioritizing the relationships over any individual.
No, prioritizing project. Life.
The
prioritizing life.
Yeah.
It's very easy, again, in this society, like everyone is always drawing success and happiness dependent of business success or financial success. Yet there's so many people, especially in the like $100,000 category, that are so sad because they're chasing the bag. But the bag's empty, but like they just make it pretend like the bag's really nice.
So how do you define success?
Happiness. I'm pretty sure like every kid is successful. Like 99% of kids up till age 10 are super successful because their parents make everything good for them. Like every day is a happy day. They go to school, they learn something. Sometimes they're a little bit sad, sometimes they're not, but they're always happy. They wake up happy. They have their mom to cuddle. They have their dad to cuddle. There's always something. Like, I think that's the goal. And like when we on Instagram and we see these guys with boats and jets and DJ booths with 10,000 of people, like everyone's always thinking like, wow, that, like I want that. They don't want that, but they think that will bring them peace of mind. Like I actually didn't figure it out until a while ago. I was on some friend's yacht, like a 100 meter plus boat, which is like 300-400 feet. I don't know. Long,
big boat.
Longest boat.
Big boat.
So I'm on that boat, and for the first time, I thought, like, wow, it's so cool. And I saw all the staff. You get the service, 20, 25 people, yacht life, caviar, this and that. Like, wow, this is so cool. And then I was thinking, like, yeah, the cost. So you have 25 people working for you full time, and then you have the engine cost, the boat cost, the initial funding of the boat to buy the boat, gas, like putting the boat somewhere, cleaning the boat, insurance, the caviar costs money too. You know, the food costs money. They probably get too much food because you don't know what the clients want to eat. So they have to throw away like 80% of the food. I was just thinking like, wow, I'm so happy I don't own a boat.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather like be on a friend's boat or maybe rent one for a day or something. But like, yo, you don't want to own a boat. So like,
You don't want to go through all of it.
Can you imagine what you could do with that instead? But that's kind of the thing. Like, if you look on Instagram, you see all these, like, cool shoes, watches, jewelry, cool clothing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It won't change your life. But they make it look like it will change your life. But it doesn't. It's not the clothing that makes you feel like, oh, that will make me happy. It's the things associated with it. And that's like, and of course, I can only say it because I experienced it, and I cannot help it if you didn't experience it and don't believe me. But it's like true, like the right shirt does not make you happy. You know what would make me happy? Like not shaving like I did now. I'm so happy I'm doing interviews.
That's success right
without,
there.
That's
yeah.
success. Not having to shave for an interview because you don't need to.
Yeah.
That's a sign of success, you know? Me being able to do what I want when I want and be okay with the repercussions.
And we've talked about how you've learned all of these things through experience.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. And so what would you say, looking back on it, that what was the biggest challenge that you've overcome?
I think the biggest challenge... No, I think I'm just lucky. I got the right information. Like, I read the right books. My mind is set the right way. I don't see anything as a challenge. I've never really seen anything as a challenge.
There was never a moment where you felt...
Well,
questioned
right
yourself?
Now, I didn't have like, a top 40 or a top 100 single, like, in the Billboard chart for, like, 2 years. Supposedly, that's a challenge to overcome. Like, the label wants a better song. They want a better album. You have to do this. You have to do that. But like I said, this is stuff from an old mentality that a lot of people still have. But if you step out of that mentality, you notice like, I don't really care, you know? And that's the thing. A lot of people used to ask me when I just started DJing, so like, so what are you going to do after this? Like when it stops, you know? So like, well, it's not going to stop. Yeah, but what if it does? Well, I don't know. I work at McDonald's. Like I'll do normal life. Yeah, but don't you rather save that money? Why? So I can pretend to be successful and rich? So say like everyone would stop booking me right now and I would never make another dime. Oh, I'm so happy I saved my millions of dollars and so now I can still pretend to be very successful and cool. It's like, no.
Yeah, what's the point? Yeah.
Well, I grew up on nothing. Like my mom worked her ass off and she made like what, $1,200 a month which back in that day was like enough to pay for the house and macaroni. She couldn't even afford a babysitter. She had to take me to the gym when she was like teaching classes and stuff. And I was very happy and she was very happy. So like you can have that and be happy. And you can also have what I have now and like fly private jets and be happy. And then if that's all gone, you can go back to doing what you were doing and be happy, you know? Wearing the latest Off-White or wearing this AP will not change your life. Like, it's not like if I take it off, I'm like, oh my God, life just got 2% worse. It's like, no, like I'm the same guy. I have the same family. I have the same friends. I have the same team. It won't change anything. And that's like the, I don't know how to explain that message to people, but that really is like, the thing that's worth most to me. And that's also why I'm happy, because I'm not afraid of losing everything.
Well, thank you so much, Afrojack.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to This Is Success from Business Insider. Our show is produced by Anna Mazarakis and Sarah Wyman. Dan Bobkoff is our executive producer, and I'm Rich Filoni. Before you go, Afrojack's got some extra financial advice you can use on your next vacation.
Going to Disneyland and spending money on Disneyland, like, it's expensive, you know, like you have to take the car there, you have to park the car, they charge like $50 for parking or something. You go there, you park the car, ticket entry is like $100, then you want to buy a churro's $20. It's like, you know, bankrupt for one day of Disney. But if you can do it and be okay with that, you're going to be so much happier than do it while thinking about like, it's so expensive, you know. Or don't buy the churro, bring your own churro from home. Really.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to change the experience.
Coming up on the podcast, we've got iconic race car driver Danica Patrick. She's the only woman to have won an IndyCar series race, but she's not sold on the all-female series launching next year.
I don't even think I would have tried to, I wouldn't have even taken part in it.
Subscribe to This Is Success in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to catch that episode and explore our archive. Please leave us a rating and write a review. It really helps others find the show. This Is Success is a production of Insider Audio.